So we're back in the telecom space with Rogers Communication. I'm Jérôme Dubreuil, analyst here at Desjardins. And Rogers, which like everyone knows, announced last week the proposed acquisition of Shaw Communication for an enterprise value of $26 billion Canadian dollars. So we're privileged to host President and CEO Joe Natale, as well as CFO Anthony Staffieri, very shortly after the big announcement. Gentlemen, good afternoon, and thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Jérôme. Thank you for having us at your conference.
Great. So let's jump right into it. First, obviously, on the proposed acquisition of Shaw, this has been discussed in the industry as a potential event for years, but still, can you please take us through the strategic rationale behind the proposed transaction?
Sure. I think, first of all, it's important to remind ourselves that we're at an inflection point in terms of the generational investment that's ahead of us in the telecommunications industry. The investments that are required to build out 5G ubiquitously across Canada to have the same level of strength and global leadership that 4G has had for us. And secondly, the investment to drive connectivity deeper into rural Canada as a whole, and to continue to offer choice and options and alternatives for consumers and businesses and for all the technologies and ideas that are coming along. The Rogers and Shaw networks are complementary. There are some incredible synergies between our footprints. You know, the extensive fiber in Western Canada will really help serve the future of the cable industry, but also help to support our ability to go deeper into rural Canada and go deeper into 5G and the capability there. When you combine the expertise of a Shaw and the expertise of a Rogers, is a very, very powerful combination in terms of not just technologies and networks, but people and capabilities of people and the strengths that people bring together. I think bottom line is, you know, having a national coast-to-coast fiber network that can be deployed to support the needs of the future around 5G, that can be deployed to help us drive deeper into the small business and especially the enterprise space where we have very, very small portion of the market, and to leverage the capability for backhaul and small cells and everything else required to build out 5G, especially as we look to close the gap in rural Canada, where there are 2 million homes right now that are underserved, either have no internet or very, very poor internet by standards set by the government.
Yeah, that's interesting. Thanks, Joe. And now, obviously, we're expecting a decision from the regulators in a year or so. How do you intend to manage the regulatory risk, and what have your conversations with the government been like thus far?
It's too early to say definitively. I mean, this is 1 week in what will likely be a year or so. So it's 1 week of 50. In terms of this, we will and are seeking regulatory approval from three places, the Competition Bureau, the CRTC, and ISED. And these are all processes that are well-known, well-established, that involve opportunity for consultation across the industry, and consultation with respect to the public as a whole. And, you know, through we're prepared for those conversations, we're prepared for those discussions, and I'm sure we will do everything in our power to look at this from the same side of the table as government to figure out what is in the best interest of the future and the best interest of Canada going forward. And, you know, we're confident that we can reach an agreement with those three governing bodies and, you know, come out the other side. I think one of the most important things we're solving for, I already mentioned it, is, you know, we need a modern policy framework that will look to the telecommunication needs of the future. And it's hard to look at the future without considering some very important aspects from a regulatory point of view or from a policy framework point of view. But how do we close the digital divide in Canada? When you have 2 million homes that are underserved, and one thing that COVID has taught us is that you know, we've created a big divide between those that are online and those that are not online. And it's not just about, you know, connecting with your friends. It's education online. It's about business online. It's about telehealth and telemedicine. So more than ever, technology and networks have become the foundation of society. It's important we have a regulatory approach or framework that solves that. At the same time, affordability is very important. And you've heard us talk about affordability and the moves that we've made in the marketplace, whether it's the move to unlimited or whether it's our program around Connected for Success, where we're offering capabilities for low-income Canadians with respect to being online and being part of the online community as a whole. So, you know, these are conversations we look forward to having with all orders of government. We look forward to having with the regulatory authorities, and we believe with like-minded people looking to solve the policy framework topics for the future, we'll find a good natural landing spot. And we believe confidently that we'll be able to kind of conclude on this transaction and move forward.
Great. And maybe lastly on the proposed transaction, if approved, you'll be taking on a significant amount of debt. How do the financials and synergies work in supporting your deleveraging efforts?
Well, you know, one of the advantages of this transaction financially is it's occurring at a time when interest rates are at an all-time low. And as we look to the potential upsides, we really want to capitalize on that leverage and the upside. We announced, and you would have seen, you know, the valuation on the deal was 10.7 times forward-looking EBITDA for Shaw. And when we look at the synergies, that drops down net of synergies to 7.6. And we think there are synergies on top of that that could take it down even further. So you can see why we decided to make this an all-cash transaction, except for a portion of the Shaw family's holdings. So that made a lot of sense. On closing, our leverage ratio is going to be just over 5 times. And with the synergies coming in fairly quickly, we see that leverage coming down to under 3.5 times. In less than 36 months, and we're very confident about our ability to deliver on those synergies. For the most part, they aren't contingent on the wireless side of the business, and so this deal pays for itself largely on the back of the cable synergies, which are significant. You know, if we look at some other metrics like dividend payout ratio, you know, shortly after close, payout ratio at our current dividend rate drops down to under 30%. So clearly, you know, some of the fundamentals are going to be there to get the leverage down very quickly so that the upside accrues significantly to the equity shareholders. In terms of those synergies, they're across the board in terms of what you would think. There are some revenue synergies. And Joe talked about them up front in terms of the strategic rationale. But we haven't factored those in to our models completely. What we have factored in are the ones that we know have a very high confidence of delivery around costs, and in particular third-party costs, as well as capital investments. And we know there's a lot of duplication that we would be able to substitute right away. And so we've talked about a synergy benchmark of about $1 billion. And as I said, very comfortable with our ability to achieve that.
Great, thanks. Now if we're back a bit to your operations in wireless, how are you seeing the quarter unfold in wireless versus the expectations you unveiled in January? Are you still in line with these?
As we said on the Q4 call, we were going through some significant restrictions in two of the biggest markets in Canada in the early part of January. As we've seen those restrictions lift, we've seen the market wake up. And overall, we're seeing very good volume in the market. Our view is that we will see year-over-year growth in terms of net new customers to the category across the industry. We think that's good. That's healthy. It means that the market is waking up and people are out there shopping and looking for opportunities as a whole. With respect to ARPU, nothing different than we said in the Q4 call. Still feeling the pressure from some of the COVID impacts that we talked about. You know, bear in mind that Q1 last year had only a small impact with respect to COVID in the latter part of the quarter. And so this will be the last quarter where we have, you know, COVID-impacted results versus, less or non-COVID-impacted results happening as a whole. But we're feeling good about the excitement in the market. Customers out there shopping. They're looking at new devices. And at the same time, we've developed some very good capabilities to transact without having to have customers visit our stores. If you recall, a year ago, we didn't have a lot of those capabilities. A year ago, we had a tougher time transacting outside of our stores. Well, look what's happened in 12 months, and these are capabilities that will serve us forevermore. You know, we've grown our Pro and the Go service now that will allow products to be shipped to customers' homes or where they might be and help them set them up either remotely or in person. We've developed a whole bunch of curbside service delivery or courier capability with digital ordering and digital self-serve. So these are all capabilities that we were working on. We put our foot on the gas last year, and now they're a substantial part of our volume. You know, whether we have restrictions or not, we have the ability to transact in both modalities, in person and through electronic means.
Great, thanks. And you touched on the ARPU growth for the quarter, but maybe a bit more in the following quarters, medium term, with the transition to unlimited and possibly roaming coming back. Are you still expecting a second half recovery on the ARPU front?
Short answer is absolutely. For to look at, you know, Q1, Joe referred to some of the big moving pieces. Just put a little specificity around it. You know, our expectation is that roaming revenue for the quarter will continue to be down about $75 million. Overage revenue, about $25 million. Same number as you heard on our call of last quarter for Q1, and that's largely coming in as expected. And so we're still expecting our ARPU in absolute dollars for Q1 on a blended basis to be in and around $49, so somewhat flat to what you saw in Q4. But as we move into Q2, two things. One, you know, as Joe outlined, we start to lap the impacts of COVID. And so, you know, year on year, expect to see positive directional changes. But it really is the second half that the overage piece is behind us. We will have largely gone through our base. There'll always be a little bit that we've talked about, but it'll be 8 quarters since we launched it. And, you know, in line with our expectations when we launched it, the overage melt will be largely behind us and won't be an impact for sort of year on year. And Moves to Unlimited will start to be accretive for us. So that's positive. And then when you put on top of that, what we hope to be a good pickup in the travel business, both consumer as well as enterprise, you know, that'll be additive to our ARPU profile. And so we continue to see good growth in ARPU as well as wireless service revenue in the second half.
Great, that's helpful. Thanks. And we've also seen that you've launched the first standalone 5G network in Canada. What's next on your 5G roadmap, and what's the expected impact on the results or on the CapEx in the coming quarters or years?
Sure. Well, as you said, Jerome, 15 months ago, we launched first 5G network capability in Canada. And here we are now with 170 cities lit up on 5G and the first standalone core, which we think is a great foundation for all that's to come. There's still a lot of work to be done with respect to further deployment and reaching deeper into other cities across Canada, including suburban and rural parts of Canada as a whole. You know, 5G will be a generational technology like no other, in the capabilities that it brings. I mean, typically we thought the move from 2 to 3 to 4G really around just speed. speed and capacity overall. But 5G has a number of capabilities that go far beyond just speed and capacity, and we think they're very exciting for the future of the industry. And with Rogers and Shaw coming together, we have an even greater ability to go further and go faster with 5G, go further and go faster and go deeper into rural Canada with 5G. 5G, in my mind, is about three high-level things that we're after as an industry. First and foremost, 5G has a brand new set of capabilities around spectrum management or dynamic spectrum management, the ability to be more efficient in the use of spectrum and therefore get more out of spectrum. Spectrum is one of our biggest costs by far. And you know, the ability to get a bigger bang for your buck on spectrum is critical to doing a good job in this industry. And with 5G, we have the ability to be more efficient in the use of spectrum, which will lower our unit costs, and those savings will get passed on to consumers and will help us grow the category to, you know, further out and more extensively. The second thing that 5G does is it makes the promise of fixed wireless an even more real opportunity. I mean, fixed wireless has been around for a long time, but it's always been limited by capacity and limited by the nature by which it blocks or impedes traffic of all different types that might be served by that tower, by that infrastructure. In the world of 5G, we have the opportunity to proportion a piece of the network towards fixed wireless and have really a specific fixed wireless capability. And part of our rural broadband coverage and expansion is a combination of fiber and fixed wireless. And fixed wireless, I believe, is at a state now where it is a viable alternative as a last mile provider. And there are 5G brings us for the very first time in terms of that capability without impeding, you know, first responders or critical phone calls or other data sessions that are important. And in the past, whenever we've had fixed wireless, we've had to deal with those things. The third thing is, you know, is the capabilities that are driven by the standalone core and by the fact that when you look at our, you know, almost 9,000 cell towers, you can think of those as 9,000 data centers in a way. And therefore, the promise of mobile edge computing is real. And, you know, the ability to leverage that capability for all kinds of IoT applications, whether they're in healthcare, in agritech, in transportation, in mining, in the resource sector. And we're doing projects right now with all those industries to look at ideas and applications to leverage the power of 5G to help drive growth and productivity in those industries. So more than ever, 5G is about the future of business. It's not just about talk, text, and data. It's about how do companies use these capabilities to reinvent how they do business. And therefore, it's about the economic digital capability of Canada. And those are the three things that we're after. We're going to push hard on this. This is about nation building as much as it is about delivering more affordable wireless capability for consumers, as much as it's about, you know, stretching further into rural. 5G is the first technology that has the ability to do all three. And we're very excited to be leading with it, very excited to be out of the gate strong with it, and Rogers and Shaw coming together will allow us to do more more quickly and faster.
Great. Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And now if we're shifting to the cable side of the business, how's cable been performing lately? It has been fairly stable despite the pandemic. Have you seen any changes in that trend recently?
No, we've seen continued good performance and momentum from the cable business. We continue to make the right investments in cable. We're really excited about the Comcast platform and the roadmap that it will deliver for the connected home, with many more things to come in the short and medium term from that platform. We're excited about the ability to leverage the DOCSIS roadmap and where that will take us. Combine that with GPON capability where it makes sense in new areas, et cetera. I mean, we've got sort of a great ability to drive the performance of our network on a success basis, on a neighborhood-by-neighborhood basis. And I've always said, you know, to you and to others that one of the beautiful things about a cable network is that you can make success-based investments, and you can, you know, address one neighborhood and one node at a time in terms of what you need out of that neighborhood or that node. And if you get that rhythm going over time, you really can do some wonderful things. So we're very pleased with it. It's nice that the restrictions, again, are being lifted, and we're seeing a lot more activity in the marketplace, which is good. But we're happy with the financial performance of our cable business, and it'll continue to be strong.
Great. And from the less volatile part of your business to media, which has been a little bit more volatile given the pandemic, how is this segment doing lately? And do you have any insights on when the stadiums will start open up? Obviously, Rogers Place, Rogers Center in Toronto, and how is the state of advertising?
Sure. So if you look at our broadcast business, we're seeing, you know, with the games being back on the air and the excitement around sports, the Northern Division NHL, the excitement around basketball, you know, the Jays, you know, spring training, like it's from a broadcasting point of view, there's lots to watch, and more than ever, sports has proven to be a very important part of the content market and the content business. And there's no better way to reach an audience than through the power of live sports and watching live sports through any device. And so we see that recovering nicely from what happened last year. Last year we had feast or famine. Last year we had no games, or we had 7-10 games a day. And from a monetization point of view, those are both difficult. Both difficult, and we're seeing that recover nicely, especially as our typical advertisers start to spend more. As it relates to the Jays, it's not so much about the Jays playing in the stadium; it's about having fans be in the stadium. The financial pressure is really about fans and fan attendance. We're watching very carefully what's happening in the U.S. And if we can get to a place where maybe a quarter or a third of the stadium is filled with fans at some point. And that's a combination of vaccination and public health approvals and support around that and doing what's right. Hopefully at some point later this year we'll get to that place. We'll get to that place. But, you know, other than those things happening, you know, it really won't change the financial trajectory of the Jays. So playing an empty stadium doesn't really do much for us. It's having fans in seats enjoying the game and therefore the economics that come with that. So fingers crossed. And I think there's not a baseball fan in Canada that wouldn't love to sit in a stadium and watch the game, because it's not just about the game, but it's indicative that things are better from a society point of view, and we can enjoy those things that we miss the most.
Yeah, me first. And going maybe on the consolidated front, regarding your guidance, would you consider providing some sort of guidance for 2021, and what would you need to have the confidence of providing such guidance?
Yeah, as we look to, you know, our disclosures at the end of the quarter, we continue to assess, you know, how much more uncertainty is there with respect to COVID. And you think about the two things that have impacted us the most. One is roaming related to travel that we talked about. And the second is the topic we just talked about relating to sports. And, you know, material for us is, can we get fans in the seats, and how many? And that's still a wild card for us. And so if you think to the rest of the year, those are material impacts for us. And if we had to sort of call that out today, we'd have a hard time doing that. You know, with any credible consistency based on what we know, and more importantly, what we don't know about how we come out of this COVID. So, you know, if you fast forward 2 to 3 weeks from now, is a lot going to change? Probably not. And so we'll continue to focus on providing investors with good short-term guidance, if you will, in terms of what we expect for the following quarter, much like we have for the last year. And our assessment is that continues to be more credible and more worthy for the investment community. And so we'll stay on point with that.
Great. Yeah, that's understandable. And now we're running a bit short on time, but maybe lastly on the regulatory front, do you have any updates on the MVNO and TPIA files? And do you expect the bid on Shaw could have an impact on the timeline of these decisions?
Yeah, the short answer, Jerome, is I don't know. I would say to you that we've been waiting for the conclusion of those files, and we were expecting them, are expecting them anytime soon in terms of announcement. I'm not really sure whether, you know, that timing will change or not change as a whole. You'd have to ask the CRTC that question overall. I would say to you that, you know, we're going to continue to drive affordability in Canada. We've been leading the way in many fronts on that, from unlimited now we're at, you know, over 2.5 million customers, and you know it was a big financial impact on our business, and you've seen it over the last 8 quarters. It was the right thing to do for consumers on that front. The CPI just came out, a consumer price index around wireless, and wireless prices are down 15%. So it underscores the fact that there are very few consumer goods that have been down 15% in the last year. And so we'll continue to kind of driving the equation on that front. It's good business for us because it expands the category, it attracts more customers, and we want our customers to use our products more. The more they use the products, the more we can continue to invest in the future. So we'll be continuing to making those comments to the various regulatory authorities and working with them collaboratively on what is the outcomes. But in terms of the specific decisions, I don't have any further insight than the last time we talked about it.
Okay, great. So that's all the time we had. Thanks a lot. I think that was very helpful, as usual. Thanks, Tony and Joe, for your time.
Thanks, Jerome. Good luck with the rest of the conference.
Thank you.